And now, Sports Day for Kia, the all-electric Kia EV6, Wheels Car of the Year, and Red Energy. Moving house? Call your local energy retailer. Red Energy.
7 minutes past six, hello and welcome to Sports Day. Jimmy Bartel back from Sydney, and he's live in the studio. Plenty to talk to him about, particularly the goings-on at GWS. But as you heard off the top, Essendon and the incident involving Luke Parker and Dylan Shield continuing to dominate the headlines.
Lloydie's got every right to say that, no doubt. Everyone has their own opinion, that's fine. But what does he want Dylan to plough through someone, give away a free kick, give away a 50-metre penalty and another goal?
When I say plough through, you can still hit hard without, I don't know where a free kick, a 50 and a goal comes from. They already lost by 12 goals anyway. So it's interesting, it's pretty defensive there, yeah. Dyson.
But what's going on with Luke Parker? I thought that was the most arrogant, unswans-like, nasty behaviour that will come back and bite him. I really didn't like that at all.
Plenty of people want to have their say, but there's no mucking around tonight. There's only one man who cuts through to the core of an issue with ease, and he co-hosts Sports Day every Tuesday.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthew's in it. Talk about a he-man.
Welcome, Lee.
Hey, evening, Sam. Evening, Jimmy, how are you?
We're both going pretty well. Hello, Jim.
G'day, mate. How are you?
Really good. You've mated me early in the show.
Yeah, you got to mate you. probably in a bit better mood than Dylan Shield and the rest of the Bombers, so I'm up and about.
So, Lee, do you want to go back to the incident itself or the aftermath and the response? What have your thoughts been?
Well, let's talk about the incident, but it's more about the principle. And let's go to a little bit of audio that when Kevin Sheedy first addressed the Giants players before the very first game, the microphone happened to be in the room. Let's have a listen to Sheedy's attitude to all this.
Don't and ever let any club or player dominate you at a ball, at a stoppage, in the air or on the ground.
Could have been John Kennedy. It could have been any of my coaches. But I know that was about 10 years ago. Don't tell me it's changed now. The physical contact sport that we play is a contest, a physical, mental, emotional one. Bullying's a dirty word in the world now. But on a footy field, you are trying to bully the opposition. And as Sheed says, you can never be intimidated. And if you allow yourself to be intimidated or dominated, even verbally or emotionally, you are going backwards big time. My view on it is that, see, but the TV cameras capture everything. So we're talking about it because the TV cameras saw what Luke Parker did. But if a player did that to any player that I coached, including myself if I was playing, you'd at least go and grab him and wrestle him and, like, just kind of fight back. Not like you've been embarrassed by the words and by the actions, or more the actions. I don't know exactly what the words. So you've got to fight back straight away. Not go and punch him. Just create the altercation. Say that, hey, I'm not going to take this. And when you actually then spread that over the whole team, I don't think it's a whole team issue, to be honest. I think it's just a Dylan Shield issue at that time. But it is a lesson to everyone, every player in the footy world, let alone the Essendon players, do not ever allow yourself to be bullied or intimidated or dominated. And Kevin Sheedy said it so well a decade ago, and that holds just as equally today.
What would Jimmy, the Geelong boys of your day, had done if that had happened?
Well, it's a discussion. So firstly, I spent 9 years under Bomber Thompson and Chris Scott, and they had similar philosophies. They voiced it in different ways, but you know, the underlying theme was exactly the same. It's whether you want to be liked or respected. And if you're being liked, you just go about it and you're happy and you smiles and things like that. It doesn't mean you don't you can't play with a smile on your face, but there's a bit of respect. And Dylan Shield and Essendon were disrespected. And you've got to actually, you know, put your chest out and act as Lee was talking about. You've got to show what you stand for and things like that. You don't ever allow anyone to walk all over you in anything. And that's what he did with that. And you can stand... Don't beat yourself, and that's a form of beating yourself. And then I remember in my early days, Bomber Thompson showing edits of Matt Scarlett and things like making younger sides know your presence, because you can actually set the tone for not only for that game, but for the next year, for the next few years.
So, and that's not about being dirty.
No, nothing to do with being dirty. Yep. And Matthew Lloyd touched on that. It's not about giving away a 50 or anything like that. It's being physical in the contest. And not everyone's going to be the hardest guy, but when it's your turn, you put your head over the footy and you front up to the next one, and you front up to the next one. And you just keep, you know, fighting away. Not going to use the word fight. You keep just sort of whacking away at the contest and the man, and you let him know that you're there. You're not going to back away. You come up close to Luke Parker in the next stoppage. You push him away and you go, I'm not going to tolerate that from him. Because what ends up happening is there's a lasting effect. So I know when GWS and Gold Coast, you know, the two more recent clubs come into it, the two coaches I had, you let them know at every contest. You feel your body weight on them. You take the tackle to the ground. It's a hard physical body spoil. Nothing dirty.
Just to let them remember.
Because next time you play them, they're going to be a bit older and a bit better. But you want to, you know, try and create some mental scars.
Yeah, it's interesting, Lee, that you brought that audio up, because that was pre-round one 2012. So GWS playing their first game against Sydney. And Dylan Shear was actually playing that day. So he would have been in the rooms. Mm.
Well, he would. I mean, but it's just a baseline attitude to competing. That's what I'm saying. And I don't think it's a team versus team thing. This is if you get sledged by another individual player, as he's individual, you know, like it's a one-on-one here. And you either laugh it off, and you might even laugh it off if you're confident in yourself in a way, or you say, no, I'm not going to take that. So you at least wrestle him. You go and actually do something to actually make sure, you know, I'm just not going to take this and just laugh it off and do nothing.
Lee, what about the reaction after it? So there's the incident itself, and then in the press conference, Ben Rutten gets asked specifically about it. And I thought that was an opportunity, you know, from a club perspective, for the coach to go into bat for Dylan. And he didn't. He talked about Dylan being one of the senior players that was failing to live up to the standards. I'm so fascinated as to what he would have been thinking then. Would Ben have been angry in the action from Dylan? Would he have been... And just thinking about the loss, you know, would he have wanted to defend him but didn't want to defend the indefensible?
Well, what I'm saying is that while the TV cameras captured, it doesn't mean that, say, the coach's box is totally aware of what happened and what vision. Because nothing happened. If it wasn't for the TV cameras, no one would have known anything, would they, except the players. And as we know, Jimmy, there's verbal byplay going on all the time. And sometimes it gets into what you'd call the denigrating sledging. Sometimes it's just a different things, different times. And coaches off the field aren't seeing that. They're not necessarily hearing it. So it is for the players on the field. And I think it is. I would say for the other Essendon players, I don't think they necessarily know what's going on either, which is why I say, hey, it's every man for himself, bottom line. And what you're saying to all your players is, do not let yourself be intimidated. It's not like we can go and have a team response here, except no doubt, like, you know, every player at every club that has listened to this conversation over this last couple of days, let alone the Essendon players, should be, and I'm sure odd coach would have actually brought it up with their players to say, listen, if this happens to us, we've got to show some fight, not go and do something stupid or punch and all that stuff, but you've got to show your fight. You're not prepared to accept it. You're not prepared, as she said, to use the word dominated, but whether it's dominated, intimidated, bullied, whatever, you just can't allow yourself to be that. And that's like every player in the competition has to be able to put their hand up in their turn if they receive it, to make sure I'm not going to take it easily.
So what would you do with Dylan Shield this week if you were Ben Rutten?
Well, I, to be honest, you sort of don't know what's going through Dylan Shield's head. So we only see it from the outside. We see the vision. We didn't hear the words.
Yep.
We don't really know all the context, right? So first of all, like I read somewhere that they'd played junior footy together. Like, in other words, that Luke Parker and Dylan Shield may have, you know, might have sort of grown up playing footy against each other or something. Like, these are things you don't know, which is why if you're sort of Ben Rutten or anyone at Essendon, you want to get to the bottom of exactly what happened. What did he say? How did you take it? I mean, get to the bottom of it, but first of all, assess exactly what the facts are, not just what the vision seems to portray.
I'd also think that there'd be a bit of play with his own confidence. He's been in and out of the side. He's been spoken about for a number of weeks of being part of these senior players who aren't up to scratch. So when someone has a go, he's probably thinking, geez, I can't really fire back with much at the moment.
He's in his shell.
He's in his shell already. Yep. So I reckon that was a bit of a factor in him not biting back or showing the physical response.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just wonder where it leaves the footy club, Lee, because I always come back to your statement from years ago that it's never as good as it seems, never as bad as it seems. Right here, right now, from an external perspective, it seems like Essendon, that it's really bad. It seems like they're in a hole. But the reality is probably not that.
Well, no, I think they are in a hole. The question is, how deep is the hole, and can you fight your way out of it? But the point of, you know, how that, but okay, we say that Luke Parker intimidated, bullied, verbalised Dylan Shield, right? And I think it's up to Dylan Shields to show some fight at the time. It's not a 5 minute later thing or a 10 minute later thing. It's reacting at the time that I'm fighting back. I'm just kind of not accepting this. And my view that, okay, you go and barrel Luke Parker next time in the contest. Well, no, that's a bit periphery to me. It's how you do it at the moment, right? Mm. But you kind of think, one of the things about Essendon, when you look at their midfield, they all seem small. Like, their big midfielder is Jake Stringer when he's available. He's not playing at the moment, right? But all their midfield group, well, they play small. I mean, they're not big men. So sometimes, you know, you got to have what they say about the size of the fight and the dog and all that stuff. But they're not a tough looking midfield. They're never going to be looking like Luke Parker is like that. I mean, he's a big, strong, powerful midfielder. Has been for a long period of time. Josh Kennedy is up there. I mean, I'm just talking about their individual players. I think unfortunately Essendon don't have a midfielder who I would say is got a bit of bulk and size about him. You know, they got Parrish and they got Merritt and they got Shield, just to name sort of three that come to mind. But they're not big, powerful men. So but sometimes that means you've got to be really powerful emotionally and verbally, because physically it's very hard to be powerful when you haven't got the size.
Before we go to a break, and Jimmy will talk about the week that's happened at GWS, I want one for both of you, is that I reckon the people outside of the footy industry, like me, when something like this happens, the thing that gets thrown around at the water cooler conversation, Lee, is that I expect a big response this week. You know, the Bombers have been there, expect a big response. That first 5 minutes against Richmond, it'll be on. Is that genuine? Does that happen?
Or should be.
It should be.
I think when you're on the receiving end of something that is a bit like symbolic, isn't it? It's as much a principle of the thing. One of our players got bullied. Therefore, okay, we got bullied. We've just got to really show some fight this week. I mean, you'd think that would happen. But as Jimmy, sometimes, it, as you mentioned, the confidence, if your confidence is a bit depleted, then it's very hard to, you know, get out of that out of that dispirited sort of manner. So, but gee, you would think so. You would think any team that feels like they've been the butt of what's happened with Essendon through Dylan Shield these last couple of days, and having such a bad day on the field, that you'd think there'd want to be some fighting spirit coming to the fore, you'd think, next week.
Well, you think that the coaching should be so simplistic this week. You've had 30 tackles for the game. They're just running, I want 30 this quarter. The first quarter, and that's it. You've got it's just complete mindset that, geez, we're only getting judged on if we come in at quarter time and we have a tackle. Like, it means you've got to go hunting for it, which gives that mindset.
Mm. Lee Matthews is here for McDonald's. My Macca's Rewards has arrived. Earn rewards with every Macca's run. More with Lee Matthews and Jimmy Bartel right after this on Sports Day.
Lee Matthews is here for Macca's. My Macca's Rewards has arrived. Earn rewards with every Macca's run.
Lee Matthews is here. Plenty to talk more with him. But Jimmy, I want to talk to you, if I can.
Sure.
Put a little microscope on you. And okay, feel free to jump in on this at any stage, Lee. Yeah. Big week at GWS.
Yep.
How does it feel now that the Leon Cameron reign is over?
Oh, look, I think we, as a club and as a coach, handled it as well as it could have been done. I think it's what he deserved, a classy send-off for a classy individual who has always put the club, and he's had a massive impact on the footy club. I know everyone can be a coach, but he was a coach of a startup for 9 years. Mm. And his values are well and truly entrenched in the footy club. I think the whole week was done in the manner it should have been done for someone like Leon Cameron.
Will you be part of the selection panel?
Yep.
Okay. And do you have a timeline on when you would like to have a new coach by?
We'll probably start putting some stuff together later this week or early next week, because we felt, out of respect for Leon, and which is the right thing to do, that you start having those discussions after he's had the send-off that he deserves.
So
we spoke about a little bit, Jimmy, on the weekend. Which word more applies, like rebuild, reset, or rejuvenate? Which one do you think maybe... They're all slightly different, I think, aren't they?
Yeah, I don't think it's a rebuild, because we've got a lot of talent in the list, and we've had a couple of good drafts as well. So, not rebuild. Refresh? Did you say refresh? Or to make another re-up?
Yeah, refresh. any of those re's.
I think it's more that, Lee. And I think when we put our heads together of what we're looking for in a coach, it's also looking at what we need in the football department as a whole. We know, I heard you talk about this, that... where you go with your coach also can set what you're able to do and what you want to do in the football department, obviously with the soft cap and the spend. And you've got to see what are the priorities that we need. The Giants, all clubs will be doing this, but obviously for us now that we're trying to fill the coach, that you've got to spread that money across on to help obviously take care of all the needs, or as many of the needs that you've got as possible. And some senior coaches can do a lot of one thing or a couple of things, and other senior coaches, you can put them in, and you need to fill other areas as well with that spend.
So you've said this a couple of times now, and I know Lee was mentioning on the weekend, we played it on Classified last night. Am I reading between the lines correctly here that you're not going to spend a large amount of your soft cap on one coach?
No, we haven't made that decision yet.
Okay.
So I'm not saying we just haven't got to the bottom of, we've got to sit down and have a discussion anyway. Mm.
Just an observation, Jimmy. Yep. Gently, like I just noticed the crowd there's some low crowds around the competition, but Giants playing Carlton. Carlton normally a pretty big drawing club, and about 8,500 people sort of bothered to turn up in a way. I mean, and okay, it's Leon Cameron's last game. We always think that getting the coach who gets the team playing the best is important. But sometimes, and maybe Sheege was the example of this when he first came in, a decade ago, you sometimes need a big name, do you, just to sort of publicise the club as well?
Yeah, but I also think on-field plays a big part. When, 2016, 2019, but then you run into COVID as well and things like that. You didn't capture as much of the momentum off the back of a couple of those final series as well. And the Giants going so. Timing is a big issue, especially for, Lee, yourself, the Northern States, because you're competing against league and just different mindset of footy followers. So there's a number of factors. It was a disappointing crowd. I'm not going to shy away from that.
But is that the crowd didn't seem to get the imagination sort of increased by the fact that there was a big day for the Giants, or particularly, last game for Leon Cameron, that didn't seem to reflect the interest of your supporter base to get along and show their support.
Yeah, it was a bit of that, but I think we've seen across the board, and you touched on it. I think whatever you think the crowd is, like games at the MCG where we've gone, there should be 70,000. We've seen there's about 55. I think that's happened across the board.
Yeah, I don't think it's an unfair argument to say that crowds would drop off more in Western Sydney when the Giants aren't going as well, as
absolutely
a footy heartland that's dealt with it for 100 years.
I agree with that.
Yeah. So, Lee, I know you talked a little bit about it on AW on the weekend, but all things considered, like, what you were mentioning there with Jimmy and brand recognition in a name, soft cap and what that's brought into the competition, and also, the Giants in general, that they're still best six players are all highly paid and really good players. Do you have a gut feel as the type of coach that they need?
Oh, no, but I mean, all the things that are just kind of we're talking about here is what is Jimmy and the Giants decision makers will be weighing up. I mean, what cost is the coach going to be in salary?
Yeah.
And different, as we know, the coaches that come in that haven't coached before maybe are in the 500,000 range. The premiership winning coaches might be in the $1 million range. So, Jimmy, and we spoke about this on Saturday, I mean, already we're starting to weigh that up. How do you get the best football operation? Which is partly I wondered, Jimmy, are you kind of thinking, okay, there's going to be a change of senior coach, but is there other parts of the club at this point of time you're having a footy department mainly, a real good look at?
Yeah, I think we're going across the lot. I know this is no different from other clubs, but you guys are addressing the Giants because they've got a vacancy as well. But look, it's really important for us for development, because we've always got young talent coming in, and you want to maximise that as well. So, you know, we hit the draft with the three draft picks that we got for Jeremy Cameron. So you want to maximise that talent. So I think development is super important for us because we're getting guys, well, still majority of our guys are from interstate. That's just what's happened, you know, for you know, the New South Wales and Queensland team. So you want to fast-track development as quick as possible. In those states as well to be competitive. So it'll be development we'll be looking at. You'll be looking at our list going forward. Whatever new coach comes in or other coaches comes around that, they might have different theories on where our list's at.
And last one, there were some reports Dean Solomon was going to come back and help Mark McVay in the interim. Is there any truth to that?
Yep, he'll give him a hand. He's volunteered some time because of their long-time teammates at the Bombers. So he'll be rolling up the sleeves and giving a hand.
So he's coming in to be what?
Help out. I guess it's like a pseudo assistant coach to help him out or give him some thoughts and ideas and help around.
Right. So, and that's
a question, Jimmy, just on the big name thing. In the sort of, I guess, not so much the footy world, but the general sort of population of Western Sydney, your supporter base, would Alistair Clarkson or James Hurd be, who'd be the biggest name?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm not sure who they'd identify with the most. I think your football followers would know both, so that's. But I don't know about the passive whether you know follower who they'd know more of, Alistair Clarkson or James Hurd. It's a good question. I don't have an answer for that.
Question that you don't have an answer for. They're the best sort of questions.
Well, who do you think, Sam? Because you probably see it from a different lens than us. So who would capture that the passive follower of sport more?
The Sydney one, but the Sydney follower we're talking.
Sydney
aren't we?
Follower. Yeah, that's the harder part of the question.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that. Right.
Well, he's got his bait.
More Lee Matthews coming up shortly.
A sports update thanks to Tyre Power. Their buying power puts the power in your lane.
He's very important to our play to our footy club, both on the field and off the field. And what he gives us, he's paid us in spades. Whatever Dustin's decision is moving forward is up to Dustin. And to be honest, he has my blessing.
Welcome back to Sports Day. That's the voice of Damien Hardwick talking about Dustin Martin and Jimmy and Lee, I'll leave the footy analysis to you two experts, but from a media context, Damien Hardwick has become the absolute master. He has, in one foul swoop there, Lee, diffused the situation, supported his player, and it's just a masterstroke, I think.
Diffused the situation?
Yep. I think he's diffused it completely by saying, if he leaves, he leaves.
I reckon it's a first. A coach has said, if one of my players leaves, yeah, I'll support him. I mean, I think, I know, I find it's a very strange thing to say, to be honest,
okay.
Because it might be just, I don't know, it just seems, I don't know whether I'd be buying into saying, yeah, I'd support him no matter what. So we, you know, yeah, we support him enough, I still support him if he leaves and he'd go with my blessing. That's a very unusual comment.
Does it just not speak to the closeness of the relationship those two have built, Lee? Or
well, maybe yes, maybe that. Maybe that, but if anything, I would have thought it opened the door up to the thought that Dusty may look to go elsewhere at some point in his career.
Well, I was listening to you guys interview Peggy O'Neill on the weekend, and that's the distinct thought that I got was that he is every chance of leaving. I still think there's this whole, cloud's too dark a word for it, but there's a whole thought around Dusty, Lee, because of everything that's happened, that maybe his career will finished somewhere else.
Well, only he seems to have some, he seems to like spending time in Sydney. So therefore it's more that point, isn't it? So like Buddy eventually got out of Melbourne and went to Sydney. We assume that's, well, his girlfriend was up there. I guess that makes a big difference, obviously, to Buddy's life. But I just thought, Dimmer, I mean, it's how you handle these things, I guess there's no right or wrong, but I thought it opened up a little bit the thought that, oh, well, if he decides to go in a year or two, we'll go with my blessing.
Jimmy?
Yeah, but I think he's almost saying that it's going to be a tough task in the next 2 years to move him out of Richmond from a pure football point of view.
Because he's contracted.
He's contracted and he's got an enormous contract. And if he's going to Sydney, there's only two clubs there. And how are they going to fit him in the salary cap? And then they've got to be compensated coming back the other way. There's a lot of things that would have to happen.
Yep, that's true.
That's probably why there's so much confidence.
Lips of Lethal is next on Sports Day.
Now on Sports Day, from the lips of Lethal, always keep your head in the zone. Visit makingourfarmsafer.org.au.
Welcome back to Sports Day. We might start with the news on the back page of the Herald Sun this morning. James Sicily signing a huge deal, Lee, to stay at Hawthorn.
Well, yeah, good for Hawthorn that he stayed. A very good player. So, yeah, I mean, a five-year contract, so he should finish his career at Hawthorn. But I did want to bring up, actually, because we were at, Jimmy and I both for AW, we did the Hawthorn-Richmond game. And at the end of the game, and I had my job to do the votes, and I'm trying to find the most valuable players. That's the way I try and do it, right? Mm. And Sicily played on Tom Lynch. And Sicily got a lot of the ball, had 23 kicks, although a lot of them were probably when he played on after the behinds, because he does the kick-in duties. And he defended Lynch fairly well, but Lynch got four goals, 16 disposals, you know, six marks. And I cancelled them out. I said, oh, well, in that matchup, I didn't think either of them won the matchup, so I didn't give them a vote. But the coaches' award is always my go-to, to see how did the coaches look at it. And Toby Dankervis got the 10 votes. I gave him best on ground also. But they gave Lynch 6 and Sicily 3. Now, Jimmy, you at the game as well. How did you read that contest, just by the way? Because I find it fascinating how, you know, that Lynch can kick four goals, but Sicily still gets votes.
Yeah, it was almost the old school matchup, wasn't it? Where we've seen a number of times in the past where both ruckmen are in the best. It sort of had that feel to it, that both of them, if they're sitting back, they'd be reasonably happy with the way each of them went. I think Lynch kicking goals maybe, I think, tilted it in his favour. Because, you know, we put a high premium on goals, but Sicily was probably in their best five players, but not in the best five players on the ground, if that makes sense.
Because he was doing almost all their kicking duties, wasn't he?
Yep.
And Richmond kicked, how many go behind? They kicked 15 behind, so he's probably had 15 kicks from the behinds, and so he's only had another 8. So surely the coaches know that. Anyway, it was interesting. I go to the footy, the games that I watched, Jimmy, and that was really interesting. How to rate those two? Because that fullback, full forward type position, that is a one on one contest, and you, as you say, ruck sort of one on one, but they don't follow each other around the field. That's not the way rucks play.
Well, yeah. I do the same with rucks. You can look down sometimes, and one will have 35, 40 hit-outs, and you have 6 or 7 of them in the advantage, but then his direct opponent will kick 2 goals.
Mm.
And you'll go, well, hang on, they've just literally cancelled each other out here.
Speaking of the rucks, Lee, the model surrounding the two big ruckmen and the evolution of that, what have you made of it?
It is interesting. I remember almost 20 years ago now when the Lions were winning some premierships, we used to play two big ruckmen, and one of them would virtually play on the bench. So, in other words, it was just all, not quite 50-50, but say a 60-40 on the ground, off the ground, not so much playing in the forward line. And it is really interesting. I mean, we know Richmond won their premierships back in 17 with Nankervis in the ruck, and Grieg almost jumped around as just a very small second ruckman. But it seems like, I mean, the Ryder-Marshall combination, the team's right up the top of the ladder. The top 8 and the Melbourne. I mean, Gorn and Jackson, a really good combination of two big ruckman types, both. And I'm talking about how they do the ruck, particularly the centre bounce ruck work, because that is becoming more and more critical, because centre square clearances, if you can set up clearances, then, you know, you set up field position. So Gorn and Jackson, I mean, Brisbane have now got McInerney. They got Darcy Ford up from Geelong, and at least he's a mature sort of big ruckman who can compete. Ryder Marshall may be the best of them all, I guess. Now, but even Richmond are playing Nankervis and Solo. And while, you know, they'll get into the forward line a little bit, mostly they're almost playing ruckman off the bench. Sydney got Hickey and Laddams. But it is kind of, in the evolution of it all, the one thing that is an issue, Geelong haven't got that. Geelong have got Stanley and Blitzarves mostly, and on certain days, their athleticism and mobility will be really, really valuable, but they're always going to be fairly moderate in their ability to play centre-bounce ruck work against the real, real big duos. So I think it's an interesting sort of watch in what the best teams are putting out there right now.
I think with all the ones that you touched on, Lee, Darcy Ford, although young, can show he can hold his own as being the second or third forward. We see with Jackson, majority of his time in his first 40 games was as a forward.
Yep.
And now Max Gorn's, you know, they're sort of sharing that. But they're hitting the scoreboard. And we saw that on the weekend. Soldo and Nankervis kicked 3 between them. And that's the problem with Geelong. Stanley and Blitzarves, at different stages, don't hit the scoreboard, because blitz halves they use to roll back. Stanley is not a big goal kicker. So it's only effective if they actually assume the role as a forward, not being a ruck sitting forward. They've actually got to play as a forward.
Yep.
And of course, the other one is Carlton. I mean, well, Cripps was even actually doing a bit of ruck work. DeConny is, I mean, with Pitnett out injured, it's sort of Carlton a little bit make do, aren't they, in the ruck position. So, I just think that having a really big, a big, powerful ruckman in there all the time by playing two in the 22, I think's working well currently.
And Lee, lastly, everyone seems to want to have their say about Jordan Dugowie. It's getting towards contract time. He's been down on form. When you watch him, what do you see?
Well, I watched that game. We did that game on Friday night. And he, you think of Jordan Dugowie. Jordan Dugowie doesn't go and get the ball 35 times. I mean, they're playing against the Bulldogs and McRae and Smith and they get a lot of the ball. And Treloar was in that category. But Jordan Dugowie virtually played centre square most of the night. And Collingwood had two goals at halftime and four goals at three quarter time. And if ever they needed another goal scoring option, and I think to myself, if you're going to play Jordan Dugowie virtual midfield like 80 or 90% of the time, I just don't think that's him. I mean, his average over his career has pretty much been, 20 odd disposals and a goal. I mean, when he kicks like two or three goals and gets 20 disposals, that's when he's a weapon. So I was watching the game and you were waiting for them to actually somehow get him into the forward half because they were so short of goal kickers, Collingwood, on Friday night. But they persevered with you in the middle. And I just think if you're talking about Jordan Dugowie as a midfielder, he's not in the best 50 in the game. It's the midfield forward goal kicker, that's where we can elevate himself.
We'll wrap up Sports Day with Lee Matthews and Jimmy Bartel right after this.
It's now time for a Blue Bet update. Blue Bet's AFL 12-point halftime early payout is available on all games this weekend. T's and C's apply. Gamble responsibly.
Having a little bit of problem with Richard. We might have to speak to him tomorrow. Let's talk to Dylan Scheel. Not talk to Dylan Scheel, but Dylan Scheel got spoken to Lee and Jimmy on the way into training today. Let's take a listen.
I mean, at the time, it didn't seem like a big deal and I moved on pretty quickly. I'm probably just more disappointed with the outcome of the game. And, we're going to look forward to this weekend and, trying to get a win for the club.
Yeah, I mean, from all reports, Jimmy, he's been in a pretty tough spot the last couple of days, and let's hope he's had some good people around him, because no matter what has happened and who's fouled, and I know we spoke about it with Lee off the top of the show, he's still flesh and bones at the end of the day.
Yep, and hopefully they give him the opportunity to make amends. So, you just want to see guys have that opportunity to bounce back. Could be the making of him.
Yep.
It is interesting, that point, because I think quite realistically, he didn't think much was in it at the time. No. So I'm saying when you have the TV coverage and you examine the vision with a fine-tooth comb, sometimes whatever happened was no big deal to him at the time, quite possibly. And that's quite realistic.
Yeah, because, as I said, he'd be shot on confidence. He'd be going back to the centre bounce going, he'd be thinking, geez, I've got to keep my spot on this side. Because he's been through that the last month. You just think, how do I get the next kick, handball?
Is he in their best side right now?
I don't know. I don't know what is their best side at the moment.
Lee, do you have a view on that? I mean, because it is an interesting point that you raised earlier about the size of a lot of them. Now, they can't
help the combination
of
them.
That's right. They can't help their size. But when they've got no Stringer and they've got no Langford and they're looking for a bit of that physicality, I'm so fascinated as to what they try to do.
Well, that's always the question each week. Sometimes things are going bad, so can we play 15 aside this week? Because we've only got 15, we've got a lot of confidence here, but you've got to play 22. So the point always is on that question you raised, Sam, is who else have they got? Like, if it wasn't Dylan Scheel, who would they bring into the team?
I don't have as big a problem with their size, because you can't change that. That's your list you're built with. So the game plan needs to fit the smaller fleet of foot. They should be closer to one of the leading tackling teams because they should be applying immense pressure. And that's my issue, Sam.
Yep.
So if you're not big, you've got to play with a greater intensity and greater speed.
Lee, always a great pleasure to have you on chat next week.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Thanks, mate.
The greats, Jimmy Bartel and Lee Matthews. Speaking of greats, Richard Humiston. Richard, taking us out. No. okay, Richard hasn't. I've said goodbye to you, and Richard wasn't there. Sometimes it just happens in live radio. Jimmy, this is all part of it.
He's having an RDO.
Yeah, I think he might be. I think he might be. Thanks for joining us on Sports Day on this Tuesday evening. We'll be back with Bruce Eva and myself tomorrow. See you then. You are listening to Sports Day. We're here for Wilson Homes and Red Energy. Big hour coming up. Jimmy Bartel, Sam McClure with you. We've got Danny Corcoran, the former Essendon footy boss from 2010 to 2013 to talk all things at the Bombers. Plenty going on there. Always good to get an insight from someone that was running a footy department. And Corey Durden, not Sam Durden. Corey Durden, the round 9 rising star for the Blues. Hasn't he made a good start to 2022? He is going to join us as well. But first, let's get to the latest in sport. It's all thanks to Polaris. And Jimmy, off the top, I want to talk to you about Dustin Martin. And I want you, as a former player and now media analyst, to tell me what you think when you hear a coach talking about Dustin Martin like this.
He's very important to play to our footy club, both on the field and off the field. And what he gives us, he's paid us in spades. Whatever Dustin's decision is moving forward is up to Dustin. And to be honest, he has my blessing.
That's just respect. It probably makes you want to play for him even more. He's not going to pressure me.
I just reckon Damien Hardwick, from when he started as Richmond coach to now, the metamorphosis, forget footy, right? Because I'll leave the experts like you to talk about that. His metamorphosis in the media has been extraordinary. Like, for him to come out there and completely diffuse the situation while staying humble and classy and basically saying, well, he's a grown adult. He's been an absolute dominant saviour to this footy club. We love him, and he can basically do what he wants. Instead of trotting out the old, well, he's contracted, so, you know, I just thought he was amazing.
Well, because also...
Well done.
He knows that as well, and he knows that we all know that. He's contracted for 2 more years.
Yep.
So why do I need to talk down or patronise you? Everyone knows he's contracted for 2 more years. He's a Richmond legend already, AFL legend.
Yep. Probably the greatest finals player the game has seen to this date.
Yep.
Record-wise, I mean, 3 norms.
Yeah, definitely modern era.
Modern era, yep.
However you dice it, we know he's going to be remembered forever.
Yep. It's just a nice way for him to talk about it.
Yeah, but if you're Dustin Martin too, you go, geez, I don't have to worry about running into the coach in the hallway.
No.
Like, I don't have to avoid that awkward chat.
Yep. And I guess, look, that's a natural, organic result of the relationship that those two have built. So in a way, none of it's surprising, but I just think, yeah, the way you handle it, and you probably have to give credit to the Richmond media department as well, the way that they would brief him just to talk openly about that. And in fairness, Peggy O'Neill, his president, was exactly the same, I think, in answer to your question on the weekend, if I'm remembering my weekend radio correctly. And that is that, you know, Dustin told me that he always wants to stay in yellow and black, but things change. That was our answer.
Don't break your promise to Peggy.
No, you wouldn't want to break your promise to Peggy.
No, but let's talk about the football, the contract stuff.
Mm.
He does have a big contract.
Yeah, yeah.
And other clubs have got to accommodate that. Firstly, salary cap wise, and then you've got to accommodate Richmond with whatever they need. It's a lot of stuff to get done.
Yeah, unless you gave him a club, doesn't matter who, came along and offered him a 4-year deal at new money.
But it's still going to be a lot of money. It's still going to be at the very top end. If he's not going to still be the highest paid
player. Yeah, but instead of getting 2 years at 1.3, someone might give him 4 years at 900.
It's still a lot of money, Sam, to squeeze in the account.
No, I agree with that. It's a good point. It's a good point that you raise. I also want to talk to you about this from Kane on Footy Classified last night when talking about who could coach GWS.
Spoken a little bit about the push for James Hurd, and about a month ago I questioned the qualifications and what he has done since his time at Essendon. James Hurd would not be in the top 20 coaching candidates for the Giants, and that's the reason
even
why.
Though he's coached his own team before.
Yeah, but 10 years ago. Like, look at what Brett Ratten has done, Michael Voss. You've got to stay involved, you've got to keep growing, got to keep developing and working on your craft and your skill set.
It is a really, I know you're not going to talk specifically about the Giants, but I found a really interesting conversation to be, as someone that coached their own side in their own right a fair while ago,
yep.
Does that experience hold to somewhere like now versus someone that has been in the game, never coached their own side in their own right, but has been getting experience underneath someone else's? Like, how do you weigh up those different experiences.
Well, you don't compare them like for like because they're not. And their experiences are different, probably the way they see the game, the way they think it should be played. So they're just different. I'm not avoiding your question, but that's just that's just reality. Like, you know, Brett Ratten, as you mentioned there, coaching, then going back and then coaching, and his experiences are different from who's a Ben Rutten, who went and served as a long-term assistant before he got the job. They're just all
different. Or Sam Mitchell, who coached at Box Hill.
Another example. And went, you know, he spent time at West Coast.
So the answer is everyone's journey is different. And ultimately, you have to marry that up with what the club that you are, that is looking for a new coach, needs for their players.
Yeah, and what are other priorities and needs you have in the football department? Because they're one of the heads of your football department. And now we know with the soft cap being a long way down from what it was a couple of years ago, you've got to know what your priorities are.
Yep, agreed. Speaking of priorities, the AFL's priority to make it a twilight grand final, it seems to be the way it's going. Gillon McLachlan addressed that last night.
I think the simple discussion is what's the best presentation of the game, the biggest game of the year? We've had a look at it through a twilight in... was it twilight in Perth that played out in a night game, and we had a night game in Queensland. We won't be going tonight. It'll be a twilight or a day. And on the other side, it's, you know, decades and decades and over 100 years have been playing at somewhere to something. And we respect that people like their rituals and the traditions, and that's on the other side. So it's, is the game presented?
So I get the sense, Jimmy, that I get the sense you and I are on the same side of this argument. I couldn't care less what time the grand final is played.
Do you know what the grand final discussion
is? But I think we're in the minority there. I think a lot of people get very passionate about it. If you talk to Caro about a nighttime grand final versus daytime, you have to hide under the desk for a few hours.
I know. And I like her passion for it.
So do I.
And I love working with Caro. But do you know what the grand final time discussion is?
Mm.
It's that little one that sits in the top of your drawer, right?
Yeah, you take it out when you need something to talk about.
Yeah, but if you're the AFL, we need a distraction. So the distraction is, descent towards an umpire. Yeah, we can get people talking about something else. Oh, let's pull out
I'm not sure you say that. I'm not sure they're that creative.
Do you know what you could do?
I don't think we're giving them too much credit.
Gil could just go, I'm leaving. And you know what? For the next 5 years, I've discussed with Channel 7 Fox or whoever else is going to cover the game for the next 5 years. And the grand final is going to be at 3 o'clock. So come see the next person in 5 years. Done.
Mm.
But do you know what we do each year? We pull it out and then we go, I'll keep you waiting next year.
Mm.
I need this little thing just to distract everyone. It's the most boring discussion ever. Just say when it is.
Yeah.
No one wants it at night. They want it either between 2 o'clock and 3:30.
No, some people want it at night.
Who?
Name it.
Name one.
Name one. We don't name names.
Name one.
I've always been of the opinion, you know how like when Seven and Fox always think that they have this God-given right to say, well, we pay all this money, we deserve to pick when the grand final is. Unless it says it in the contract. If I was the AFL, I'd be like, well, that's lovely of you. We're going to pick because we run the league.
Yep.
The only thing that has now changed my mind on that in the last few years and what we're seeing at the moment, if one of these big American streaming companies came along and said, hey, you know the grand final time? Mm. Oh, yeah. Yep. If we just sort of gave you an extra 50 mil, can we kind of decide when it is? You know, as long as it's within a certain range. I reckon that would be really interesting. Like, hey, we actually want to play it at 5:30 p.m.
So the two things about that.
Well, if it's worth an extra 50 mil, okay.
The AFL goes into those discussions and go, we're a unique game. I sound like I'm quoting Kevin Bartlett. We're a unique game. We're an Indigenous game. We're a game for the people, all that sort of stuff. And you say, our game is played when there is sun shining.
Mm.
And that's it. If they go, what if we give you 50 or 100 million? And go, well, that's going to fly.
Fine.
Well, then you sell that. You go to your general public. The 50 million is not going to our coffers, it's going back to clubs and back to grassroots footy.
100%. Perfect.
That's the only way. But it's got to be.
Yeah.
But when you go there and you say you're buying our game to be televised, it is a sunshining grand final.
Mm. I agree. Former Essendon footy boss Danny Corcoran is going to join us next on Sports Day. You are listening to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy. If you're moving house, call your local energy retailer, Red Energy. And for Wilson Homes, celebrating their biggest cash discount ever. Sam McClure and Jimmy Bartel with you. We spent a fair bit of the first hour, Jimmy, with Lee Matthews talking about the situation at Essendon. always fascinating when a club that we think is underachieving is and how they get out of the hole that they're in, because they are in a hole and that's not too dramatic. And I think the footy club have been the first to get on the front foot and admit that. Danny Corcoran was the footy boss at Essendon from 2010 into 2013. So well-versed to speak about all things at Bomberland. He joins us on Sports Day. Danny, welcome. We appreciate your time.
No, pleasure, guys.
What's the gut feel as you watch on now as an outsider?
Yeah, I do watch her. I do watch a lot of it. And I think my overriding thoughts are that without you know, Hurley unavailable and Hooker not playing, and I think they've got a bit young, a bit quick. And I think that the other thing is that, you know, at the end of every season, before draft and trade, we would put up on the board. You know, we'd put up the Premier if it wasn't us, and put up our best team. And I think if we did that with the Bombers, particularly down back, where they probably lack a little bit of, you know, height and strength, and but also in the midfield, you know, with Job obviously retiring, that big body midfielder. Because look at your opposition. You know, if you put Cripps or Dangerfield or Oliver or Petrarca or Viney, I can keep your Harms. You can keep going. You know, I don't think that the Bombers have got an equivalent to live in the cauldron of centre bounce and the clearances. And I think they've got a bit young, a bit quick. And that's not to say that some of their good young players just need time, and we've got to be patient and around those players.
Danny, I take all your points on board, and you're touching on talent, and you know better than most. You've been around footy, but isn't the main discussion around Essendon, especially in recent times, on attitude and the old argument being liked versus respected?
It looks like it from the outside. I know Dice really well, and you know, have a lot of respect for him. But I'm very much probably in the David Parkin camp, where, you know, I'd rather your anger when we win than your praise when we lose. And, you know, I was never a good loser, and always respectful of the opposition, and you know, well played, mate. But, you know, that hardness you require is just so essential in the jungle of AFL. You know, you need those, and you need hard players and hard, big-bodied players around the ball, and they make a difference, and they set the way for particularly the younger players coming in. And that's why my feeling is that perhaps they've got a bit young, a bit quick, you know, with young Perkins and even, you know, Darcy Parrish gets a lot of the footy. But, you know, in terms of splitting open the contest in the cauldron, he's probably just not there yet.
The reason why I asked that, I've spoken to a lot of people in the footy world, and you wonder what's going on with Essendon, and, you know, that discussion I just spoke about, liked versus respected, had that conversation a lot in my time down in Geelong. There's a couple of people feel that the whole liked attitude, I guess, by Essendon is still a flow-on effect of almost being apologetic for 2016 when they had the gap year. Do you feel like there's still people involved with Essendon almost apologetic?
No, not really. I don't, and not knowing it intimately now, but no, I don't feel that. I think there'll be a hangover for that, you know, for a period of time. But a lot of these players are have well and truly moved on from all of that. And I think sometimes the things are simple, you know, in our face. And you know, Jimmy, a good friend of ours, you know, Dave Whedon was yep. told me that that he thought Truck was going to be really good coached, you know, through the next coach program. So if that's the case, the club's got to get around him and really support him. We've seen Hardwick, we've seen Buckley, we've seen so many of these young coaches go through these tough times, and it's now time to circle the wagons around the coach and the coaching staff. He's got a good staff. I don't think there's an apology from the past. I think everyone's moved on well and truly. This is what I think from that.
Yep, that's fair.
And they're just regenerating the list. The problem is, it was talked up too much before the season. You know, they're in no way known with the young list were going to be, you know, a contender. Hopefully they would have made the eight.
But Danny, it shouldn't be happening like this, though. I mean, I take all your point about that they're young. Freo are young as well. And now I'm not saying they need to be Freo, but where is this blue-collar footy club that we saw last year under Ben Rutten? Where have they gone? So you're the expert among us that's been the head of footy. I'm just wondering, have they tried to implement a too complex game plan that's backfired? Or have the players lost relationship with the coach? Like, what's the most likely outcome for, take away the fact that they're losing games. It's more the way that they're losing that is a concern.
Yeah, it is. It is. And that's a fact. And they're brushed aside, you know, a little bit too easily. For me, some of them are very, very good, you know, on the outside. But the way I see it is there's a real need for those real clearance players, those bigger body players to be, and it's just not working. We're not getting our hands on the footy enough.
Yep.
In the crunches, and whether that's coaching or not, I tell you what, it's a big difference when your really good mids can. And the thing is, players today, and Richmond are a great example of it. Players today in the modern game have to compete in every facet of the game. They've got to be good inside. They've got to be good outside. They've got to be able to defend, and they've got to be able to attack. And if you can't do that today, you're a very, very limited player. And you probably only have, you know, one or two of those in your team in terms of playing the whole system. So I think that's a real... There are some really good attacking players, but if you don't defend or you haven't got the physical capacity to defend, you're going to be exposed badly. And I think in quite a few games that I've seen this year, the Bombers have been exposed badly on the counter.
So do you think it's just purely a talent thing, Danny? Like, I understand you're saying they need the big body mids and they're hard to get a hold of. Once you get a good one, that you can see the impact they have on their side. So you don't think it's an attitude thing when they come out and have 30 tackles and Callum Mills has 13 for the Swans?
It's a problem. I think it's a problem that needs to be certainly addressed with Dyson and the leadership group about how we do it. But you've got to actually walk the talk as well. And the problem is we're not seeing enough of that through the strength of the players and the leadership group at the moment. So, but I do think you know, and Jim, you've been through a review at a footy club, what it's like, and the leaks and the damaging aspects of what that does to a club. I think the club just needs to circle around the coach and the players and really say we've been pretty ordinary in these areas, and our goal for the rest of the year is to make inroads into those aspects of the game, because as we've seen a couple of times, and particularly the couple that I've seen have been pretty ordinary. So but, you know, I don't think there's any suggestion of Truck, you know, not having the players or not having support. They're just not at the level of where the opposition is at this point in time, despite all the hype.
It's a massive month, I reckon, Jimmy, for the footy club. They've obviously got Dreamtime at the G, up against what looks to be a pretty rampant Tigers outfit. Then they go to the Adelaide Oval and take on Port, then the bye, and then the 150th anniversary on a Friday night against Carlton.
Carlton.
I mean, that's
a tough run.
As you would know, Danny, that those, you know, the club will say, oh, it's only just another game. But when it's your 150th anniversary, and if your back's against the wall and you're playing old rivals like Carlton, that they become pretty important matches for your club, don't they?
Yes, they do. And they stand, you know, these are the ones that the big games for your footy club, particularly 150th, you know, everyone's just got to stand up, and particularly against Carlton, for God's sake. And you know, it's and they're pretty good. They're pretty good at the moment. But they're going to come up against a pretty good group of players, and you've got a few superstars. Carlton at the moment, none, you know, the big fella, the number nine, but also the key defender is a pretty good player too. Mm. They've got a few others that they're really on the up, the Blues. But there's a tough month, and you know, we'd hope that the Bombers would respond after the public humiliation of the game against the Swans.
Danny, great to have you on. We really appreciate your insights.
Pleasure, guys.
Danny Corcoran there, former Essendon footy boss. And, yeah, his message is for the club to circle around the coach. And it sounds like they're going to do that. I don't think there's any...
No.
I don't think there's been any inkling or any suggestion that Ben Rutten's job is under pressure at all. But the fact is, as you would know, Jimmy, when you take over a club like that, well, it's any club now, isn't it? You just... There seems to be less patience with supporters because the competition has become more equal.
But do you lean into his thought process? It's just talent and we overrated them?
I think there is an element of that. Like when I look at Essendon's list and I pick out their best six players, if I compare that to the top six teams on the ladder right now, I don't think it's very close.
Yeah, but I understand that. They're an emerging team with a lot of draftees and young talent, and they've got some holes on their list. We've all noticed that. They're starting to address that through the draft. Obviously, Hobbs will be a very good inside mid when he matures. But
what's the but there?
But you can't have under 30 tackles in a game.
No, completely agree.
And I don't think it's a talent thing.
Their effort in those losses has been appalling.
Yeah.
And we know that because they had a very similar team last year, and they were the opposite in as far as they were honest. They always had a crack.
Yeah, so you have to establish really quickly as a coaching staff, is it you don't know what you're doing?
Yep.
So do we need to just walk through and explain where you need to be on the field, what we're trying to achieve?
Which is hard to do in season.
No, you can have some positioning stuff. You know, next time you're at a stoppage, you know, be back shoulder, don't be 2 metres off. That gives you an opportunity to tackle. When the ball leaves the area, you've got to transition.
Yep.
You've got to cut out release marks. That then leads to the next one. Well, if you know what you're doing, can you physically not do it? Like, are you just not fit enough or big enough, strong enough? Do we need to get you bigger, stronger, all that sort of, almost the Olympics motto, stronger, higher, faster, that sort of stuff?
Yep.
And then the third one, which you bloody well hope is not coming out of their mouth, is you're just choosing not to do it.
Yeah, and that...
An attitude thing.
Does that speak to culture and leadership?
Well, this is what you've got to get to the bottom to. And I still remember a coach talking me through that. When things are going bad, they're normally the three questions you've got to ask of your group or individuals.
Do you know what you're doing? Are you physically capable of doing it? Or is it a choice that you're not doing it?
Yeah. You don't know it. Can you not do it? Or you choose not to do it?
Yeah. Interesting stuff. I'm sure we'll talk a lot more about Essendon in the coming weeks. Round 9, rising star Corey Durden from the Blues is going to join us next.
Was he doing this stuff at North, Al Durden? Because he has been terrific, hasn't he?
That would have been his impact.
Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy and Wilson Homes. Sam McClure and Jimmy Bartel with you. Now, just so that no one takes this the wrong way, I've worked with Brian for a while. Jimmy, you've worked with Brian. He's A, one of the best commentators that the game has seen, and B, one of the funniest blokes. And so when that happens, you have to take it the right way, and that is to laugh. Now, Corey Durden, who's a Round 9 rising star and has been absolutely great for the Blues this year, is not Sam Durden, who, of course, used to play for North Melbourne. They're different people. I'm actually still not sure as we go to air if they're related. I'm sure the man himself can tell us. Corey joins us, I think, in the middle of a golf club fitting session. Welcome, Corey.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Is it any relation to Sam?
Yeah, we're distant relatives somehow. We quite haven't worked it out how, but... I'm pretty sure all Durden's are related. So, yeah, he messaged me after that game for the nomination and said, "Oh, yeah, mate, I'm living in your shadow now." This I actually said, as far as BT's concerned, we're the same person. So, yeah.
Corey, tell us about your season. I mean, Carlton have needed a small forward for quite some time, and you've answered that, and you just look like you're enjoying your footy.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's been a good start to the year. I've just really just been focusing on bringing pressure and, I suppose, playing my role for the team. And it was nice to get a bit of recognition on the weekend. But, yeah, we're building a nice little small forward brigade down there with Jesse Motlop, Matt Owies and Zach Fisher. So, yeah, really exciting.
Corey, Jimmy Bartel here. Well done on the nom. Are you like all small forwards who think they could win a Brownlow in the midfield as well? Or are you just going to lock yourself down as a small forward for a while?
Well, I actually, yeah, like most small forwards, played my juniors as a midfielder. And I was pretty happy to take on the small forward role. I think I've built a really good strength in my pressure. And, I'm looking forward to making that a role that's probably, I suppose, good way to for me to build and shape an AFL career, and maybe later down the track we'll talk about some midfield time.
You mentioned a couple of the other small forwards, and obviously the one that we've seen you paired with a lot is Owies. You guys just purely measured on inside forward 50 tackles. How's the coaching staff coming and giving you a pat on the back if you've done a good job?
Well, Vossi's been pretty stern on how our small forwards bring pressure in the game, and that's been the main sort of measurement, I guess, on our performance, forward 50 tackles, all that sort of stuff, but also just helping out our team defence and system. A lot of around our F2 running and off-ball running patterns, what we do for the keys, you know, sealing or blocking for them. And then, yeah, obviously the relentless pressure that we're aiming to bring, that's mainly our role in the team. And when goals come along the way, it's nice.
The first part of the question, who did you used to follow as a kid?
Oh, well, I wasn't much of a footy head growing up, so I actually didn't really barrack for anyone. I went to North Melbourne here and there because my old man supported them, and out of the two Adelaide teams, I went for Crows. So, yeah, but other than that, I didn't really follow any team.
Well, because it's only going to lead to my next question. As Carlton get more wins, there's more Carlton fans packing the stands, and I was up at Giant Stadium, and they pretty much had the whole outer wing.
Yeah, a few there, weren't
there? Yeah, you get a bit of a buzz, you know, now applying your craft in front of a big and building supporter base?
Yeah, definitely. I get energy from the crowd. I think when they're up and about, Carlton fans, I can really feel it out there. Yeah, it was funny out at GWS there. A few boys joked around and said that we actually had the home crowd. So, it was good to see.
Now, Corey, let's get into the serious stuff, and that is your golf game. Now, I think I would be right in saying that the best golfer down at Carlton Land is Jack Nunes. Now, Jimmy, Jack Nunes last week was playing the old course down at the National, had three birdies in a row, and then was on the eighth hole, which is a par five, hit iron 3 wood onto the green, had an eagle putt after three back-to-back birdies, putted the ball off the green, then hit the ball from the rough into the bunker, and then left one in the bunker, and then wiped the hole, and then birdied the next. So he's birdied 4 out of 5 holes and should have birdied the other one.
Well, maybe even eagle. Yeah.
I think he's off about 5. Corey, who's next, and where do you fit in?
There's a fair bit of competition at the club. A lot of the boys are just starting to get into it. Nunesy is definitely up there. Sam Doherty, I reckon, pretty handy golfer. But the likes of Jack Silvani, Zach Fisher is also getting into it. It's trending at the club at the moment. I'm probably sitting below average as I'm just getting into it. But I'm sure I'll climb up the ranks soon enough.
There's no way Soss could be a good golfer.
Well, I heard a little story that he wasn't counting strokes today, so we'll see if he cheats or not.
Corey, be careful. Careful sending out those allegations. What clubs are we going with down at Drummond Golf?
Fitted up for the Titleist T300s, so I think it might be a 3 to 4 week wait. I'm a left-hander, so.
No, we need to get Corey into the Callaways, into the proper things.
Yeah. Some big cricket bats, so you don't miss it.
No doubt about that. Corey, great to have you on. Great to see you enjoying your footy. And the Blues look like they are heading towards a finals campaign. I know no one wants to use the F word too quickly, but we can say it from the outside. Thanks for coming on. Well done on your nomination, and let's hope you're part of that campaign. Good luck.
Cheers, fellas. Thanks for having me.
Corey Durden there, Carlton Round 9 Rising Star. More on Sports Day next.
This week's Rising Star joins us thanks to Methodist Ladies College. Live a bigger boarding life at MLC. Visit mlcboarding.com.au.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Sam McClure, Jimmy Bartel and Lee Matthews joined us a little earlier to talk all things that have happened in the last few days in footy, particularly the situation surrounding Essendon.
Well, the post is broken. Matthews hit it. Talk about a he-man.
Welcome, Lee.
Hey, evening, Sam. Evening, Jimmy. How are you?
We're both going pretty well. Hello, Jim.
G'day, mate. How are you?
Really good. You've mated me early in the show.
Yeah, you got to mate you. Probably in a bit better mood than Dylan Shield and the rest of the Bombers, so I'm up at about.
So, Lee, do you want to go back to the incident itself or the aftermath and the response? What have your thoughts been?
Well, let's talk about the incident, but it's more about the principle. And let's go to a little bit of audio that when Kevin Sheedy first addressed the Giants players before the very first game, the microphone happened to be in the room. Let's have a listen to Sheedy's attitude to all this.
Don't and ever let any club or player dominate you at a ball, at a stoppage, in the air or on the ground.
Could have been John Kennedy. It could have been any of my coaches. But I know that was about 10 years ago. Don't tell me it's changed now. The physical contact sport that we play is a contest, a physical, mental, emotional one. Bullying's a dirty word in the world now. But on a footy field, you are trying to bully the opposition. And as Sheed says, you can never be intimidated. And if you allow yourself to be intimidated or dominated, even verbally or emotionally, you are going backwards big time. My view on it is that, see, but the TV cameras capture everything. So we're talking about it because the TV cameras saw what Luke Parker did. But if a player did that to any player that I coached, including myself if I was playing, you'd at least go and grab him and wrestle him and, like, just kind of fight back. Not like you've been embarrassed by the words and by the actions, or more the actions. I don't know exactly what the words. So you've got to fight back straight away. Not go and punch him. Just create the altercation. Say that, hey, I'm not going to take this. And when you actually then spread that over the whole team, I don't think it's a whole team issue, to be honest. I think it's just a Dylan Shield issue at that time. But it is a lesson to everyone, every player in the footy world, let alone the Essendon players, do not ever allow yourself to be bullied or intimidated or dominated. And Kevin Sheedy said it so well a decade ago, and that holds just as equally today.
What would Jimmy, the Geelong boys of your day, had done if that had happened?
Well, it's a discussion. So firstly, I spent 9 years under Bomber Thompson and Chris Scott, and they had similar philosophies. They voiced it in different ways, but you know, the underlying theme was exactly the same. It's whether you want to be liked or respected. And if you're being liked, you just go about it and you're happy and your smiles and things like that. It doesn't mean you don't, you can't play with a smile on your face, but there's a bit of respect. And Dylan Shield and Essendon were disrespected. And you've got to actually, you know, put your chest out and act, as Lee was talking about, you've got to show what you stand for and things like that. You don't ever allow anyone to walk all over you in anything. And that's what he did with that. And you can stand, you don't beat yourself. And that's a form of beating yourself. And then I remember in my early days, Bomber Thompson showing edits of Matt Scarlett and things like that, making younger sides know your presence, because you can actually set the tone for not only for that game, but for the next year, for the next few years.
So, and that's not about being dirty.
No, nothing to do with being dirty. Yep. And Matthew Lloyd touched on that. It's not about giving away a 50 or anything like that. It's being physical in the contest. And not everyone's going to be the hardest guy, but when it's your turn, you put your head over the footy and you front up to the next one, and you front up to the next one. And you just keep, you know, fighting away. Not going to use the word fighting. You keep just sort of whacking away at the contest and the man, and you let him know that you're there. You're not going to back away. You come up close to Luke Parker in the next stoppage. And you push him away and you go, I'm not going to tolerate that from him. Because what ends up happening is there's a lasting effect. So I know when GWS and Gold Coast, yeah, the two more recent clubs come into it. The two coaches I had, you let them know at every contest. You feel your body weight on them. You take the tackle to the ground. It's a hard physical body spoil. Nothing dirty.
Just to let them remember.
Because next time you play them, they're going to be a bit older and a bit better. But you want to, you know, try and create some mental scars.
Yeah, it's interesting, Lee, that you brought that audio up, because that was pre-round one 2012. So GWS playing their first game against Sydney. And Dylan Shear was actually playing that day, so he would have been in the rooms.
Well, he would. I mean, but it's just a baseline attitude to competing. That's what I'm saying. And I don't think it's a team versus team thing. This is if you get sledged by another individual player, as he's individuing, you know, like it's a one-on-one here, and you either laugh it off, and you might even laugh it off if you're confident in yourself in a way, or you say, no, I'm not going to take that. So you at least wrestle him. You go and actually do something to actually make sure, you know, I'm just not going to take this and just laugh it off and do nothing.
Lee, what about the reaction after it? So there's the incident itself, and then in the press conference, Ben Rutten gets asked specifically about it, and I thought that was an opportunity, you know, it's from a club perspective, for the coach to go into bat for Dylan, and he didn't. He talked about Dylan being one of the senior players that was failing to live up to the standards. I'm so fascinated as to what he would have been thinking then. Would Ben have been angry in the action from Dylan? Would he have been just thinking about the loss? You know, would he have wanted to defend him but didn't want to defend the indefensible?
Well, what I'm saying is that while the TV cameras captured, it doesn't mean that, say, the coach's box is totally aware of what happened and what vision. Because nothing happened. If it wasn't for the TV cameras, no one would have known anything, would they, except the players. And as we know, Jimmy, there's verbal byplay going on all the time. And sometimes it gets into what you'd call the denigrating sledging. Sometimes it's just a different things, different times. And coaches off the field aren't seeing that. They're not necessarily hearing it. So it is for the players on the field. I would say for the other Essendon players, I don't think they necessarily know what's going on either, which is why I say, hey, it's every man for himself, bottom line. And what you're saying to all your players is, do not let yourself be intimidated. It's not like we can go and have a team response here, except no doubt, like, you know, every player at every club that has listened to this conversation over this last couple of days, let alone the Essendon players, should be, and I'm sure odd coach would have actually brought it up with their players to say, listen, if this happens to us, we've got to show some fight, not go and do something stupid or to punch and all that stuff, but you've got to show your fight. You're not prepared to accept it. You're not prepared. As she said, he used the word dominated, but whether it's dominated, intimidated, bullied, whatever, you just can't allow yourself to be that. And that's like every player in the competition has to be able to put their hand up in their turn if they receive it to make sure I'm not going to take it easily.
So what would you do with Dylan Chill this week if you were Ben Rutten?
Well, I, to be honest, you sort of don't know what's going through Dylan Shield's head. So we only see it from the outside. We see the vision. We didn't hear the words.
Yep.
We don't really know all the context, right? So first of all, like I read somewhere that they'd played junior footy together. Like, in other words, that Luke Parker and Dylan Shield might have sort of grown up playing footy against each other or something. Like, these are things you don't know, which is why if you're sort of Ben Rutten or anyone at Essendon, you want to get to the bottom of exactly what happened. What did he say? How did you take it? I mean, get to the bottom of it, but first of all, assess exactly what the facts are, not just what the vision seems to portray.
I'd also think that there'd be a bit of play with his own confidence. He's been in and out of the side. He's been spoken about for a number of weeks of being part of these senior players who aren't up to scratch. So when someone has a go, he's probably thinking, geez, I can't really fire back with much at the moment.
He's in his shell.
He's in his shell already. Yep. So I reckon that was a bit of a factor in him not biting back or showing the physical response.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just wonder where it leaves the footy club, Lee, because I always come back to your statement from years ago that it's never as good as it seems, never as bad as it seems. Right here, right now, from an external perspective, it seems like Essendon, that it's really bad. It seems like they're in a hole. But the reality is probably not that.
I think they are in a hole. The question is, how deep is the hole, and can you fight your way out of it? But the point of, you know, how that, but okay, we say that Luke Parker intimidated, bullied, verbalised Dylan Shield, right? And I think it's up to Dylan Shields to show some fight at the time. It's not a 5 minute later thing or a 10 minute later thing. It's reacting at the time that I'm fighting back. I'm just kind of not accepting this. And my view that, okay, you go and barrel Luke Parker next time in the contest, well, no, that's a bit periphery to me. It's how you do it at the moment, right? But you kind of think, one of the things about Essendon, when you look at their midfield, they all seem small.
Always great to hear from Lethal. That does us for this Tuesday evening. I'll be back with Bruce Eva tomorrow.